Hi there. Welcome to the Dialogue on Digital Rights for Media Practitioners. My name is Roland Yagaba, and I am the founder of Mwado. Mwado is an African social network that is working to ensure that creatives on the platform earn from their content. I am also your host. This is a documentary-style podcast where we'll take a deep dive into the experiential divide between women and men in media while they're conducting their work online. You will hear views from 7 different Ugandans in the media industry on this topic. But due to the pandemic, the interviews were carried out by sending voice notes recorded using phones. So if some of the sound is not that good, please understand and forgive us. This podcast has been made possible with support from the Women at Web Project, which is under the Collaboration on International ICT Policy for East and Southern Africa, also known as CIPESA, or CIPESA, depending on how you pronounce it. Our other partner is Phoenix Reason, whose empathy workshop framework we have used for the interviews. So now I will let our participants introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Kanaram Gume, and I am an investigative journalist with NBS Television. I'm also a radio show host on Next Radio, political show called The Big Talk. I'm also a podcaster of two podcasts, one called The CoronaCast on coronaviruses and lessons we've learned, and The Election Podcast, one on politics. And that is about the 2021 general elections in Uganda.
My name is Caro Aliek Bayanga, and I am the managing editor for the digital section, digital content at the Monitor Publications Limited.
Hi, my name is Danze Edwin John, aka Dijan. I'm communications and media personality.
My name is Yvonne Injuna. I work with New Vision as a sub-editor. I have worked on TV, I have worked on radio. Now I'm working with print media.
My name is Emmanuel Sejengo. I'm the editor of The Kampala Sun. The Kampala Sun is an English language tabloid of New Vision.
My name is Sima Chakuhede Sabiti, and my background in the media has been quite varied. I have been a radio presenter. I have been a magazine editor. I've also worked in the marketing department of Uganda's biggest media house, as well as working in their online department.
My name is Eva Zanye, Ernest Bazanye. I'm a former journalist, currently everywhere, consultant, writer.
This is episode 7. In this one, we shall question how the media has tackled issues on media coverage and representation of women online. All right. Welcome all of you to the podcast. Thank you for agreeing to participate in this. Let's dive straight into the questions. With examples, if different from the ones shared, how do you think the media has been reporting on some cases of technology-enabled violence in Uganda?
Well, media in Uganda needs more training. The journalists, us, we need to go through more training and understand the basics. Most of the journalists that do report about this, they do report it as, you know, just any other story. So this happened and blah, 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 which is wrong. I think you need to know the basics. For example, when I started to report about sexual reproductive health rights way back in 2016, my reporting changed when I received training in 2017. I started to understand the basics. I sort of know what to do and who to go to and how to report about a particular subject, what language to use. And this is what is lacking when it comes to reporting cases of technology-enabled-based violence in Uganda. It's a subject that we have not tackled fully. We've not addressed ourselves to in terms of like training. And there's a lot of... there's need for journalists to, for example, not to do moral equivalence, which is so doing X is moral equivalent to doing Y. Therefore, someone doing X is just as good or bad as someone doing Y, regardless of what X and Y actually are, which is something that we as journalists continue to do, and we need to move on from that. I think that's one thing that is holding us back, training and moral equivalence in our reporting.
You know, you talk about how the media reports on technology-enabled violence. I am tempted to break it into two also parts. There is a traditional media that sometimes, maybe not all the time, but sometimes tries to be professional, and they will report the news. First of all, they will determine if this is worth reporting or not. If it is something about someone's personal private life, and the person has a a right to do whatever they want to do in their privacy, as long as it is not harming anyone, the traditional media will not pick it up. They will leave it, let it be, and say that is not news. That is not what people, that is not what constitutes news for us. But of course, the tabloids, whether they are papers or online, will pick it up. And of course, a lot of the time, it is usually reported in a way that puts the victim, if I may use that word, down. It's rare to hear, what does the victim have to say? What does the victim feel about this? Are we reporting this in the right way? Are we being fair? Are we being objective? Do we have all the facts on hand? No, they just don't. They just go, you know, and see what happened, who said what. Right, let's go and report this. So a lot of the time, the tabloids especially will report very unfair, very biased, very partial way. And a lot of the time it is negative. It is bringing down, you know, mocking, almost laughing, almost saying the victim deserved this. Traditional media will, for a good chunk of the time, will try and be professional about it and report the situation as is. That said, sometimes, excuse me, even the traditional media sometimes do not do a good job. Sometimes you'll find, even if they report about the story, let's say the story went to court, therefore they feel, yes, this is the story worth reporting, that you will find that certain things have been done in a funny way. The word they use, the connotations they use, you can still find, you still realize that, you know, it's a man's world, if I may put it that way. Because a lot of the time, the stories that are reported are usually about women. Now, if I can talk about, you know, most of the time you find, even if it's gone to court, it's a woman who's saying, I was stalked online, I was abused online, and this is what the person did and said. You'll find that even still the words being used and even the slant of the story is almost, you know, like, yeah, it's another person complaining, and who told her to do this, or who told her to say that, you know, that it may not be written, but it sort of comes out that way. So the reporting, I think, needs to improve a lot. It's usually not fair, it's usually not, does not think of the victim. In terms of, are we being fair to everyone, well, the victim and even the supposed abuser, are we doing everything fairly? Usually that is not done. And so I think the reporting needs to improve a whole lot.
I think the media has largely ignored many cases of technology-enabled violence in Uganda. It's understandable because with the freedom to express, for people to express themselves using technology, there is also a lot of abuse. So there are a lot of allegations. Now, in the process of balancing the stories while reporting, the media often hits a dead end. Someone makes an allegation, and you try to get to the person for further details, and they can't divulge anything, or they deny. Sometimes there are fake pages which are created and allegations made. So you may be culpable as a journalist if you just do a cut and paste job. And anyway, it's against the professionalism. Sometimes because people express themselves in very coarse language on especially social media, it also becomes hard. It is when the traditional media reports on it in their style, it looks watered down. Because if in the traditional media say you can't mention private parts as they are mentioned on social media, well, it will look watered down. So people have there are cases which, especially, I'll give an example of Stella Nyanzi's case. She wrote a poem about the First Lady, and in the poem she used words. I think words like vagina, referring to and the state took her on, and she went to court. She spent in prison quite a long time. Now, the media followed that story from the time of her arrest to the time she got justice in court. So yes, the media follows it, but follows it cautiously. Because the number of times it's very easier to hold traditional media culpable. Those companies are easier to sue than the seeming ghost on social media streets. So the media has to be very cautious, because the fines that they pay are very heavy lately. Media houses have been forced to pay up to 300 million shillings, I think, for defamation. That was the case of Red Pepper versus Kadaga, the Speaker of Parliament. So they have to be very cautious, or else they'll be sued out of business.
How do I think the media has been reporting some cases of technological enabled violence in Uganda? I think we are heavily censored, though free at the same time. So most media houses or media personalities or even basic communicators are very careful with what they say, who they tag, who they post, which image they use, because of the repercussions. I'll use myself as a case study at NBS, Next Media Services. People have this assumption that we are a state media house, that we broadcast state propaganda only, but that's not the fact. The facts are, we are a business that has over 600 plus people that it looks after, plus their families. People losing their jobs because they've insisted on running a story, or they've pushed a particular sentiment on air, or someone has said something and they want it covered, affects a long line of people down. You see, one of the people, the companies that never laid off people as Next Media or NBS. So we try to trade as carefully as possible and be as fair as possible to all parties, because of the political air that we are in and the high standards or regards that we are put at. So those are kind of the dynamics. One day to be NTV running a story, one day to be NBS, PBS, Bokeda, you name it, all the others will do the same thing. People will never give you what they believe is the right thing or measure of or fair kind of judgment. So when it comes to violence, when it comes to technology-enabled violence in Uganda, I think the stories aren't told frequently enough. One, because of the fact that, especially if it happens to men, they're not really pushing that agenda out there. And then the impact, they don't measure the impact beyond the internet. It usually just bans online. They never think about the mental health that this person is going to be placed in and all those other things. So that's the sad reality we are in. Maybe online platforms try and report that state. I see the people in the West or other regions deeply talking about technology-enabled violence and etc. But our culture, our nation right now is ready for it, but isn't having the discussions yet. But this is a good thing that these discussions are beginning now. So if I was to give a score on everything, I'll say about 50%. We have some distance to go.
I think the media has been reporting on it terribly. I think the media has done a terrible job of reporting on it, because first of all, there's that whole sense of glee when it comes to, oh, we've got so-and-so's naked pictures, or so-and-so's naked pictures have leaked. There's never any attempt to either protect that person or try and track down the person who actually leaked them, or who could be suspected to have leaked them. And it's I mean, even the Brian Isiko case, unfortunately I can't quite recall the name of the MP who he was stalking, but the way the media handled that, even their headlines, love messages, these were not love messages, he was stalking her. So I think the media has a long way to go in terms of framing the language and understanding the power they have when it comes to setting people's perceptions of these cases, especially considering the kind of society that Uganda is.
Do you have any examples that have stood out for you on sensational bias reporting on matters regarding online abuse of women or men?
I think for me, the story that stands out, the story that meant, that was really reported highly, was a story about the woman MP who was stalked by one Brian Isiko, and in different ways. And I think because she went a step further and she took it to court. I think many people go through that experience and they try and manage it by themselves. They try and go low. They try and just go silent or something. I don't know. Maybe stop at the police and everything. But the MP went to court, and she was not having any of that. So I think that that's the one that stands out for me. And that's actually one example where I feel like the reporting was across the board not really very well done. From different media, everyone seemed to sort of think, in their reports you could say, even those who tried to be professional, it was in undertones, and then those who are the cowboys and everything, everyone seemed to sort of think and say, oh, what's that problem, it's just a young boy, let her leave him alone, let her just talk to him and pack him off, or who doesn't want a little attention. And it was very disturbing. I do remember that with one of my friends, my fellow editors and friends at the Monitor, we were so upset. Three of us ladies were so upset because we had a discussion on our group, and people seem to think that, most of the men especially, were mad. We're like, you can't say that. What is this with your wife who's being stalked by someone? What is this with your daughter? Would you still feel the same way and think, she's just being too much, let her enjoy the attention a bit, or let her just talk to him like a little boy and that kind of thing? Would you say that? And we did an editorial as well about how this was not funny, and the woman had the right to go to court and present her case and what was happening. The court would decide according to the evidence provided, but she had a right to go to court. And generally, people out there should understand that if a woman has been, that stalking, basically stalking online, everything is not allowed, it is not acceptable, and it should not be encouraged anyway, because this is just encouraging, other people out there to sort of think, oh, fine, any other stalker now will think I can get away with it, look at what the public is saying, it's fine, the woman is being just, stubborn and silly, and should be acceptable of my advances and everything. So that would be encouraging other men to do the same, and for stalking and that sort of abuse to go on. That was a very sad moment, I think, in you could say the reporting of such a case. We did, I don't know if any of us really tried, any media house really tried to look at the merits of the case, of the issue, you know, very deliberately, what stalking really means, how to deal with stalkers, what the government should do, what policies are there, how people can be helped, how bad is, you know, cyber stalking or bullying in the country. I don't think that that was, I think we should have done that. I don't think we did that a good job on that. So that's an example I remember that was very sad.
Truth be told, I can't give an exact example, but I just know scenarios. Again, I'll mention Esther again, because she's a lovely person. I really don't know her other business or whatever it is. She's doing some great stuff with pads and all that stuff. I seen her with, I think, Rita Styles or something, and they were in a truck, garbage truck, pushing a gig. I think it was for NRM, and people abused them, but there was this comment that stood out that said, blah blah blah, NRM, you're a prostitute, no wonder you're supporting this party, something like that. So those are things that I sight and see. Then other times I see someone laughing, I think it was Paper, or looking at a video, and then say delete this segment of the video to this segment. The message that gave off was her face isn't good enough to be on that body. So that's the implication of what happened. You see content creation or content reaction, if you're a curator, how I interpret it as your end user is how the message is being put off. Those are just the basic rules of communication or social media. So those are the incidents that I can name right now. The rest are usually so many, I really don't pay attention to the small crazy accounts, the bots that are out there abusing people. But I would say that because it really hit home, because when someone is trying to do something very amazing for the community and then they are pushed down by all this bullshit, it really hurts. Then I see other people calling out their exes, and yeah, it's really fucked up. But I guess that's just the sickness that is with virtual clout and communities on the internet.
Media coverage continues to rely on men as experts in the field of business, politics, and economy. Does this affect the way that you consume the news?
Media coverage relying on men as experts in the field of business, politics, and economy has been going on for a very long time. And for a while, I think this was because really most of the experts in the field were men. But over time, as more women have been educated, as more women have, you know, gone into those fields, we now have female experts who can talk very ably on all this business, politics, and the economy. Having many more men be the experts, or be chosen, sorry, be not targeted, be having many men being chosen, being asked as experts by the media, does it affect the way I consume news? Yes and no. I think if it's a topic I'm interested in, and I think if the male expert does a good job of explaining what the issue is, I have no problem. I'm happy with that. It's information I can use, and I can go ahead and, you know, use it. And for me, that's helpful. If it's a woman, I think that, then again, also, if it's a woman expert who can explain well, and makes me understand the issues at hand, you know, emphasizes them, gives good pointers, gives good examples, explains what is happening, gives a good analysis, then I'm happy with that. And so personally, as Carol, I don't mind if it's a male expert or a female expert, as long as they are able to articulate the information well. And I find that it helps me, it's important, it makes me help make an informed decision. So I have no problem with getting information from male expert, as long as I feel it's helpful. However, if we have more female experts speaking, it does a world of good for many things. First, as you've noticed, the more women speak about certain things, the more women are seen to be in certain professions, doing certain businesses, the more the younger women and girls believe that it's possible for them to do those kinds of things. So if there are very few female experts in a certain area, and people are, and they're not talking and people are not seeing them, then many, because people tend to copy what they think is possible, what they think, oh, that's, I can do that, if she can do something, they can do that. But if they don't see it, then they're a bit hesitant, thinking it's not possible or it is difficult or that kind of thing, which is not true, but that's the thinking any human being, you know, generally would have. So having more female experts would help people believe that it is possible to do certain things, it is possible to reach certain heights, it is possible to get into those those professions. But also having women experts talk about certain issues would in a certain way, certain things, I feel like, you know, if a man talks about something that is masculine, then I'm more likely to believe it. I can't think of an example that, let me talk in that. Let me just, for example, give the line of medicine. This is just my opinion. If a man is talking about prostate cancer and you know what it does and how the prostate works and all that kind of thing, it's, I think, easier for the men to believe, you know, and say, yeah, I think that's okay, and because it's a man who has those organs and who understands, and therefore probably they feel, yes, he knows what he's talking about because he understands what it's like to have that sort of condition, or he knows. Different from if a woman talked about it, you know, she may have all the expertise and everything, and she might even be a better urologist or something than the men. But for some reason, because someone would think, but they'll probably be more willing to listen to the man because they think he probably knows more because he's like me and therefore has the body parts that I have. So again, I think that if you flip it, if I think maybe, for example, female pediatricians might be, people might be maybe attracted to them more because they feel she's a mom, so she knows what it's like. Okay, of course there are fathers and who have children, are male pediatricians, but they would feel like you know, she knows what it's like to do this or to have this, she knows what it's like. Or if, let's say, we look at gynecologists, many male gynecologists are praised and liked, and you know, and everyone, there are so many I know that people cannot praise enough, you know. But I think that, again, for women, if a female gynecologist is speaking, they might sort of think and say, okay, yeah, she understands because she has those same organs, and she kind of knows what that pain is like, or what that feeling is like, or what that issue is like. So when we have experts talk about certain things that lean more towards the masculine and the feminine, I think that that can affect the way a person perceives something. So if I think that having more female experts is speaking out would do us a world of good, because then we'll hear different perspectives, we'll hear different narratives, different experiences, and that would be, you know, it would make a better sort of, can I say, variety or choices for us to hear from.
Number 20, I can't really speak on this. First of all, this is okay, let's see, I need to put this within context, because I know it's a kind of thing which can get someone triggered or offended, because of what my response is going to be. Let me give you the example that I am 46 years old and have been watching the news since I was a kid. I remember when when I was a kid, there was a time when you would never ever see a female minister or a female CEO or a female expert or a female leader in any particular field, except
of what they call women issues. So bear in mind that there hasn't been a whole lot of time to, because the obstacles to women reaching the level of reaching the level of expertise which we would let the media call upon them to comment on this and this. That it's you know, it takes a while to become an expert. You don't become an expert at 22. You become an expert at 50 something. And so guys have a head start. Guys have been on the road to becoming experts for a very long time, and a lot of that time women were not even allowed to be in this race. So the glass ceiling and the traditional hurdles to achieving expertise have only been recently lowered or opened, or I can't say removed, because there's still plenty, they're still there. So when you see very few, when you see fewer women experts in being called upon by the media to comment on general issues, it isn't because the media doesn't trust women, or because the media doesn't respect women. I'm not saying that the media trusts women or the media respects women, because the media is really not a person. It doesn't have an independent intellect. It doesn't have a consensus brain where people sit down and say, we are the media and we have decided that we're not, you know, we don't do that. I mean, I spent 20 years in the New Vision, and I remember very well that I think I had two women editors in chief. I've had plenty of female editors, so I know that even the New Vision, in a place like this, which you can see that the gatekeepers are themselves women who have gone through the struggle it takes to get to a position of seniority in the media. So I can't speak for them, but I'm going to assume that they would not be biased against having female voices as experts. So I'm going to say, for example, especially for the New Vision, I know that there are many times when we would be speaking, when we'd have a topic and we would have a panel, and we'd really be concerned about the fact that you guys, another panel with no women on it. I mean, I just come on. But the thing is, it's really difficult to populate a panel, populate all your panels with an equal number of men and women, because in so many of the fields which we have, the number of men who have been privileged enough to reach expert level is larger than the number of women, due of course to the fact that women were only able to start getting, start trickling into these fields like at a relatively recent rate, and that is why you are going to be hard pressed to find 60-year-old, you're going to be hard pressed to find an expert in historical East African in the history of the East African economy, that's a person who is like, has to be, you know, if you're going to be talking about the East African economy's history, you have to begin doing your PhD like around, 1985, and war back then. I don't even know how hard it, I can't even think of how many female PhDs there were. It's, I'd like to say that it's not a function of the way the media operates, it's, or the media itself operates, because the media isn't a person, the media isn't an individual. And like I, the example with the example I've given, which is the New Vision, I know that New Vision management itself just is not skewed against female voices. It is actually active, it actively tries to ensure that as much as possible it gives as much opportunity to, you know, equal to gender balance. Does this affect the way I consume the news? No, it doesn't, because I decided that the information which is going to come out, I mean, whether it's coming from a male or a female voice, it's the information is going to be different. If someone is going to tell me that the economy grew by 5.9%, if the information is coming from Maria Chwanuka as Minister of Information, Minister of Finance, whether it's Maria Chwanuka or whether it is the information is coming from Matthias Kasaija, I mean, it's the same figure, 5.9%. So it really doesn't affect the way I consume news. It's a default position that the information itself doesn't have a gender, and the messenger is really the messenger, or the newsreader, or the reporter is just the person who brought them the gender neutral message to me, so it doesn't really affect the way I consume the news.
I don't think it's true that media coverage continues to rely on men as experts in business, politics, and economy. Because at least for the Vision Group, all platforms, the TVs, the radio station, the newspapers, there is always a deliberate attempt. It is to have women interviewed. But Bukede newspaper, it actually has more women voices than men voices throughout on any issue. So it is not true. However, sometimes it appears like that. For a reason, the main reason, in my experience, is that women may be less accessible on certain issues. You have a deadline to beat, and you're calling up people for interviews. Higher chances that men are likely to respond immediately and fast. Women are likely to give you an appointment later. As a tabloid in Kampala Sun, we have several interviews with celebrities. Now, usually, when you want to interview a male celebrity, it's a matter of come here now and we do this, and it's done and dusted. A woman, in many cases, One, she may ask you for the interview to use pictures taken by her photographers, probably in a studio, and not for the live interview. Two, she's likely to tell you to wait and she prepares herself for it. Some cases, she asks you to actually first send the questions, so she reads through them. There are cases where, on some issues, especially when you ask about their relationships, they tend to tell you to wait for the answer when they talk to their husbands. It is less likely with men. So, in the effort to beat deadlines, sometimes the media goes with voices of men, more men than women. But there is always a deliberate attempt to have women's voices in the media. Yes, even when you watch news bulletins, there are often women targeted for interviews. So, by my experience, that is not true now. Perhaps it was true many years ago.
I think this is a biased statement. Media coverage continues to rely on men as experts in the field for business, politics, economics. I think this is a biased statement. And this is, here's why. Again, I'm going to use my community or my circles that I know. I'll use NBS business perspective, Isabella. Media table, Isabella Mildred. Probably doing most of the political policymakers. She's talking to almost all the people in government out there. Flavia Tumusime, Cynthia. There are so many women right now who are in charge, who are leading the conversation and the discussion when it comes to policy and expertise and etc. So I think that's the ambiguity, or that's the vague assumption that is currently pushed out there. I work with a couple of people that still believe that there's a gender bias in our workspaces, yet it's always up to us to stand up and fight for it. I've personally worked for only women as my direct supervisors, not out of preference. Right now I prefer it that way because of how much quality they add to my work ethic and the tidiness, and of course the behavior change and learning how to be around mothers and women. From all the way from Sylvia to Pamela Adong to etc. to Vivian, I've worked under women, I've been raised by women, so many, 5 sisters to be exact. So I think this one, I can't really give insight on it because my reality is very different. With politics and politics, maybe because there's so many men, and then the women that are in these political places, people don't really rate them that much. Yeah, but in the scenario that it was that way, does it affect the way I consume news? It doesn't. It doesn't matter who's delivering the news. I personally really just want balanced, informative, knowledgeable people giving me the news about change, policy, economics, social justice, etc. It's just, it doesn't matter as long as it's balanced. To have more women doing it, if the scenario wasn't that, I would definitely welcome it. Because, man, equality and equity, it is what it is. We have to be better human beings. We have to be better communicators and a media house, or media houses in this case. So, unfortunately, Next Media, for example, has a lot of women in very big positions. So my reality is very different, and my career path has also been different. I've been surrounded by so many women, working under so many men. Yeah.
Do you find it true that while men receive abuse on account of the views they hold, maybe they're powerful, their professions, their skills, their opinions, on the other side, the comments women receive seem to quickly target their identity as women, so their appearance, their age, their marital status, their clothing, things like that?
Yes, especially in our cultures. We are elites, and therefore we just have these conversations in our corporate circles and all, but this is where we come from, which is our cultures. Back there in the conversations between our uncles, our fathers, our relatives, and extended families, this is deep-rooted. A woman cannot speak, even on functions. A woman cannot even give a speech before the man does, who is the husband in this case, or the elder brother. And in most cases, when they do give comments, especially when they are, at like functions or in conversation, try to sort an issue, you hear comments like, shut up, for you, you're saying that just because you are a woman. Yeah, but what does that have to do with anything? So this is experienced actually in most of these things, especially the conversations that have to do with sorting issues. Just stop. She said that because she's a woman, or she said that just because she's wearing a skirt, or she said that just because she's not yet married. Yeah, but what does that have to do with anything? I think that our opinions should be respected regardless of who we are. They should be respected because we are adults, or should be respected because over time with maybe gathered experience, whether I am married or not, whether a woman is married or not, I think they should be respected because of who we are, and that to put into account that we are different. So I agree, yeah, most women are actually looked at in terms of like gender spectrum, as opposed to who they are, what profession they're doing, and their own personal opinions.
Yes, of course. Absolutely. I think that question really answers itself. When a man in, let's say, a corporate setting is tough and, you know, he's demanding or whatever, then he's a boss, you know, he's handling his shit. But if it's a woman, then clearly she's a ball breaker, she's a bitch. They start asking questions like, why is this woman so tough in the office? It must be because she's single. You know, she's not married. She doesn't have kids. Or it must be because she's not that attractive. You know, those are the, as the imbalance. And definitely the women will receive abuse on that. If you look at, just pick any typical Twitter war, for example. Where maybe somebody has said something about a particular political party or something. If it's a guy, usually they'll tell him something like, oh, you're stupid, or you're not qualified to discuss this. For a woman, they'll tell her, anyway, first go fix your face. Or anyway, I'm not surprised you're talking like that because look at your teeth. You know, that kind of thing. It's you see it. It's right there. So definitely, that question is 100% true.
By the fact that there are more men than women on the internet, and the fact that, let me bring it down to Uganda culturally, I think there's a huge disadvantage in how people treat the ladies versus how the men are treated, even when it comes to online abuse, like you're saying in this particular post. Women are going to get a lot more flack or stick. I see Esther on Twitter being attacked, people calling her a prostitute, calling her a whore and all those things. It's nasty. You get it? No one ever calls at a man and says, oh, you're a whore, you've slept with a number of women. No. Sometimes even they brag about it. Sorry, guys, but it is what it is for the men. This is what we do. This is what our community of men do. And it gets to a point whereby it borderlines on harassment or that targeted harassment towards the women. They will go for their faces, their body. Look at Winnie Nwaji. I mean, I love her comments on Instagram because she fights back. She hits hard. She doesn't take shit from any of those people abusing her. You abuse her something, she gives you point blank. I don't know whether it's her therapy or just her personality, but it puts a point. No one tends to do bullshit in her comments. That image that went around about her butt cheeks and the scan, whatever it is, or tattoo, that was really none of anyone's business. It's her platform. You chose to follow, you chose to view. How her body is shaped or formed is never really any of our business. She's okay with posting it. Talkability for her own personal gain, for her feel good, it's none of our business, whatever the strategy, because those are all the comments I was reading there. So, yeah, there's a big injustice when it comes to how people treat men or women on the internet and how people criticize them. Someone will genuinely do something bad online as a woman, but then they attack in the comments, will come your face, you're ugly, you're black, you're white, you're fat, you get it. So, and the pressure, and it's never the same for men. I've seen a few instances whereby someone will get your AV and say, you're saying ABCD, but look like you're AV. And then people will laugh at you and etc. So that's how that difference or the bias issue in quotes in this term in terms of these facts. So yeah, there's a huge, I can't even believe what we're talking about differences in abuse for men or women. It should really not even be there. But just as that's just how sad the things go when it comes to the internet.
A friend of mine went for a job interview and they asked her if she's married. Not in the sense of we are going to give you a job and we want to know if you have a family, maybe we'll give you insurance. In the sense of you're beautiful, are you married? Imagine this is a job interview and they're asking you, they're telling you you're beautiful and they're asking you if you're married. Some things really, they don't come along. If it is a job interview, you should interview someone on grounds of their competence, not on grounds of their beauty, not on grounds of their, you know, identity as females. But this is exactly what usually happens. Much as you know, men could receive abuses on social media because they are quote-unquote dense, what people usually, you know, term some people, but they will say women are sluts. They will say women are sluts and they never care about anything apart from, you know, their femininity. So yeah, I think it is true that men receive abuses on the account of whatever they say, or, you know, their professional skill and opinion and power dynamics, whereas women, yeah, on their identity as females. You know, you could just say something. Women get opportunities mostly, I'm going to say mostly because not all the time, but mostly women get opportunities because they are good looking, yeah, so they will be appealing. Even if you see an advert, yeah, it's usually something that you can see and know that if they had used a man, maybe this advert would be good, but because they think a woman is more appealing to their audience, that's why they put them there. Yeah, so women will get opportunities because their voice is soft, maybe they are more polite, things like that, which really should not be the case, because women are competent, women are skillful, and we deserve to be given opportunities based on that also.
Yes, it's true. The public is often quick to judge women by their identity and not by their view. They often associate their views with their identity. And however, some women have used their identity as women strongly to urge you back. I'll again go back to the case of Stella Nyanzi, the university researcher who is now running for woman MP for Kampala. She refers to herself as Nalongo or Wenene. In simple language, that is Nalongo, a mother of twins, who has a big vagina. Now, she has, whenever she makes that statement, they shock and awe. She shocks people and into listening, and yes, what is she going to say? And she goes on. And people listen to her. Some take offense. They find her language very abusive. But well, how else do people, should people speak to power? The naked protest has always been a part of our women's talking to power. In my culture, the worst thing that is considered a curse that could ever happen to you is if your mother in protest undresses in front of you. Women have used the naked protest also in politics. So they have used it, but also that is because they are fighting back this identity of you are a woman. So because of this, you can't even have makeup, you just makeup and nothing else and all that. So it is unfortunate, but it happens.
I find that people are, well, it depends, I think, but overall people, men or women, get abused for various things, I think. I wouldn't necessarily, shelve it and say men are abused because on account of the power they have or on account of their opinions or things like that, possibly. But I think also women can sometimes receive abuse because of the opinions they have, opinions on different things, opinions on life, opinions on events that are happening, opinions on politics and things like that. So and yes, also sometimes here's the thing, when a woman is when she makes a comment on let's say a political or something, you'll find that some of the comments, yes, are, if they are targeted, abusive comments will be on her, what her opinion on what she has said, and others might be on her, you know, her looks, her age, or things like that, or even marital status. While for the man, it is true, you rarely get them sort of going above and beyond. So if a man says something, there will probably, abusive comments on his opinion, but you rarely find that they go to his marital status or the way he's looking, or what his hair is like or something like that. So women tend to get a bit more of the brunt in terms of their age, their status, marital status, their looks, their, what they currently do. While men may not get so much of that, men may get mostly on their opinion and what they, but also men will get on their status, not necessarily marital status, but their status in life. If a man is making a comment and he's not a political animal, maybe people say, who do you even think you are to start, dabbling in politics, that you've never held a position. Or if he's talking about the economy or something, and people think that, you don't have experience in that, they will attack him based on that. So I think that it varies. You can't necessarily say, women are only abused when it comes out, comments are mostly on this. No, I think it depends. It depends on the context. It depends on what the person has said, and it depends on also people who are abusing. You find sometimes, depending on where the debate is going or the conversation, some people tend to stick more to the opinion and everything, or the kind of people who are also commenting. It depends on that. So I think it varies depending on the context, depending on the person, depending on what they've said. In my opinion, it varies.
And that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks once again to our participants for agreeing to be a part of this. And thank you to the women at Web Project under Cypessa for making this happen, and Phoenix Reason for allowing us to use their framework. Catch you on the next episode. I remain Roland, your host.